Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are glad that you could be with us today. This task force meeting is open to the public, and your comments are welcome in Zoom chat throughout the meeting or during the public comment period that is going to be held around 11:50 Eastern Time this morning. I'd like to begin roll call of our task force members, so when I call your name, let us know if you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Hans Bloomdijk.
Good morning.
Kelly Spiro.
I'm here.
Pooja Babra.
Morning, I'm here.
Chris Blackley.
Good morning.
Shyla Blend.
Good morning.
David Butler. Steve Eichner.
Present, good morning.
Raj Gavarti. Adi Gundlapli. Jim Jurgis. Summer Kalan.
Good morning.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Meg Marshall.
Hi, good morning.
Anna McAllister.
Good morning.
Devin McGraw.
Good morning.
Ethan Mehta.
Good morning.
Dustin Neal.
Good morning.
Elio Oliveira.
Good morning.
Naresh Thunderbrajan.
Good morning.
Scott Robertson. Alexis Snyder.
Good morning.
Bill Sutherland.
Good morning.
Christian Tadris. Cheryl Turney's not able to join us today. Afton Wagner.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you, everyone. And before we turn our meeting over to Hans and Shelley, Tricia Lee and I would like to just take a few moments to make a few comments. First of all, I want to thank everyone for participating on this task force. I appreciate the engaging discussions. And now we're at the point we need your help formulating draft recommendations. We realize that for many of you, this is the first high-tech task force that you've participated on. Those of you who are not high-tech members were selected for this task force based on your individual expertise and not the organization you work for. So we're at the point that we need your help to finalize recommendations in the topic areas discussed to date. And so I just want to say that the final recommendations are the consensus of the entire task force. So please feel free to contribute your input on those draft recommendations. In fact, we really need your input drafting those recommendations. And right now we have a lot of good ideas and comments on the worksheet, but we want to take those comments and turn them into those draft recommendations. And Hans is going to help us walk through how he does this. And I just want to point out Hans and Shelley as our co-chairs, even though they're starting to do this process, they can't do this work all by themselves. So I'm encouraging all task force members to volunteer to help draft those recommendations. Not everyone needs to weigh in on every single line on the worksheet, but maybe you can volunteer to write up one or more. So during today's call or afterwards, please let the co-chairs know which recommendations you're comfortable drafting for the task force to discuss at a future meeting. And with that, I'll turn it over to Tricia Lee to see if she would like to add anything additional.
Thanks, Mike. I'll echo your thanks for everyone's participation so far. We're just about halfway through our task charges, and so that's a pretty big milestone, a lot of great discussion. But one thing that has kind of come to our attention, at least one individual has expressed some hesitancy in participating and drafting recommendations, thinking that they need to be reflective of their organization's position on things. And we just want to remind you, kind of like what Mike just said, that you've been chosen not for your organization or company's position on any particular issue, but because of your expertise via your resume and varied experiences. And so the recommendations document that will be shared with that full high tech and comes back to ONC is really reflective of you. Individuals, your organizations are not signing off on any positions that are made. So I hope that helps for anyone that might be feeling a bit hesitant. And just a reminder that, we're halfway through. We really want clear, concise recommendations. There's been a lot of great discussions, but ONC, we really can't do much with discussion notes. But what we need are your recommendations. So I'm not going to say we're the genie in the bottle, but if you had the genie in the bottle, you wouldn't just want to discuss things with the genie. You'd actually want to tell the genie what you want. Now, your wish is not our every command, but we do take the recommendations very seriously. This is your opportunity to let us know within the scope of the things that we do, certification, standards, coordination, policy, work, what it is that can help advance pharmacy interoperability. So I'm not sure how more emphasis Mike and I can have on this being your chance. And so I do hope that there won't be as much inertia or hesitancy in really telling us specifically what your recommendations are. And again, we're halfway through, so we really wanted to emphasize that for you. Again, thank you for your time. And I'm going to hand things over to Hans.
All right. Thank you and good morning. We're going to follow up on some of the comments that Tricia Lee and Mike just said. But first of all, welcome. Today we are switching to a new task. We are looking at the agenda right now and are moving into that will be introduced in a moment. And we will have a little bit further discussion around some of the drafting, how we started to go about that, and how we can collectively move that forward. So looking forward to that. Also want to welcome the audience from the public with a reminder that while you do not have the opportunity to join into the verbal discussion throughout, there will be opportunity during public comment, but you are absolutely welcome to join in on the chat and put your comments, questions, otherwise in there. There has always been very lively discussion there, a good number of points there that will be included as part of the notes as well, and that we can tap into for thoughts and ideas also. So take advantage of that, and then we'll certainly have the public comment period later. With that, you look at the agenda. We have task three. Shelley is going to go in a moment to get further into that with a presentation today by Prusha, Barbara, and Justin Neal. We'll discuss that further. We'll have our public comment. And then at the end, we will go back to planning next steps, what is coming up next week, and as well as what can we do in parallel to move this all forward. So appreciate that, Shelley. Why don't you pick it up from there and with introducing task three, and then we'll go back to the agenda on recommendation drafting.
Thanks, Hans. I just want to keep our well wishes and safety to our colleagues in Florida. Looks like you have a pretty bad storm there. So family and friends, have them in your prayers. I'm sure that they're going to need it today throughout the Southeast and up the coast. Today, as you could see our agenda, first, Hans is going to do the recommendation and drafting example discussion, and then we will go into task three, which is identify standards needed to support prescribing and management of emerging therapeutics, including but not limited to specialty medications, digital therapeutics, and gene therapy. So we're going to start after Hans is done with his section to go into our presenters, who I'll remind you have 5 minutes. And just also to remember in the chat to make sure that you're on everyone, not on the panelists. And with that, I think, Hans, I'm going to turn it back over to you. And if we can pull up the spreadsheet.
Right. So let's have a look at that. And what we're going to just step through is that since we have gone through task one and two and are now beginning to turn them into final recommendations over the next couple of weeks, want to have a look at how we are arranging that. If you can go to that topic one and scroll slightly to the right. And it should be column E that we should have a look at while we can look at D as well. That's perfect. So what we have done so far is collect a number of discussion points earlier in an earlier column. And then in D, we started to create some draft recommendations. And you see in there, either somebody specifically or a couple of people with red marks started to identify what that is. What we're currently doing is going to the right-hand side to E and trying to where we see recommendations that relate to each other. Where there's opportunity to combine them, put them in there, pick up the language from various ones of those and start to craft that as well. You still see a fair amount of red in there as well, because there's a couple of folks already jumping in to provide some clarifications as well. But the structure that we see is that it starts with recommend that ONC. And that really is meant to clearly indicate it's something that ONC can do. They can do it in whole, or in part in collaboration with others, but it's something that ONC should pick up. And then followed by, whether it's them, with themselves, with the community, in the first example here with pharmacy, pharmacists, public health, a number of areas, to do something. And then provide a rationale. Why is it that we think it's important that that's being done, which can then help prioritize and understand where that is going to be put on their roadmap. Or whether they might say, well, that was a great rationale, but from our perspective, other things are, with the bandwidth that we have, more important to tackle first. And we are currently still using the organization of the topic at hand. In this case, if you go back to column one, the topic at hand was more technical standards, and we had some short-term and long-term questions around that. We have this around the public health emergent use cases and otherwise. So it's in that first area. So we're looking for anything that attached back to that. We are seeing that between topic one and topic two, there are some topics. That come up and that there needs to be continuity. We still now try to figure out how we present that. We're not quite there yet, but we're clearly going to see that some comments, like, for example, around certification or certain standards to be used, are not only relevant in emergent scenarios, but also in normal operational times and otherwise. So that we still have to run through to make sure that it's clearly organized as to what does it apply to. To the task one only, to task two only, or something that is cuts across everything that we need to move forward with. As you scroll down for a moment, so in the intent is that in column E now we are picking up from what is in draft recommendation in column B. In this first example, we pretty much were able to pick everything up. As we go down, we might find some areas in column D have not yet been highlighted, where we have a question around either scope, is it really within the scope, or is it something that that needs to be a bit more clarified, a little bit more targeted. So we are going to have some follow-up on that specifically, but where you have your name in here and looking at that, if you can take the examples on the right-hand side to look at, okay, this is what we're trying to get to, I'm going to put my suggestion, my recommendation more in that format. You may do that at this point in time in column D, where Shelley and I are picking it up and then copying it over into column E and start there. And then we may have further discussion, like you can see here with some red marking that in this particular case with Ike, we're going back and forth on some things to clarify. But if you can make your suggestions still in column D, with enhanced clarified statements there, and we'll move it over and do some further tuning as needed, so that we then can use after we've gone through the upcoming topics, that we can go through column E pretty much and says that is there consent? Do we have any concerns with what's stated here? Is somebody strongly objecting? Are we missing something? As well as then just making sure that from column B we didn't miss anything substantial that is supposed to be in scope. So that's the way we're going to try to work through it offline in parallel. We have some folks that if you go further down, there are still placeholders there for a number of people. So we are particularly looking at those. If you Let's see. I think it's not to pick on that on Jim, but it happens to be the first one that popped up. Where you see placeholder, have a look at that, because you may feel comfortable that this is it, then just remove placeholder. We know at that point in time that it's ready to start to move in the final recommendation column, where we need to make sure that everybody is comfortable with that. So I'm going to stop there for a moment and see whether, Shelley, you have any additional comments before then opening it up and making sure that we're all in sync on how we're trying to get from D to E. We've done it now for initial pass, not meant to be totally complete for the topic one. We're going to be doing the same thing for topic two. If that's where you have most of your comments, please go ahead and already make updates or put in recommendations that are not there yet, but that you're thinking of.
Thanks, Hans. That's a great overview. And again, as Mike and Tricia Lee had said, we really encourage you to get those recommendations in place. And so really look at column E. I just want to alert Mike. There were several people who came in late, so make sure that they're captured. And I think Pooja has a question.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks, Shelley and Hans. So I just want to make sure I'm understanding. So if we, so I know there's going to be some things where we're thinking we could wordsmith the recommendation versus kind of clarification. So how best should we, do you still want us to just work in column D if we have some wordsmithing to the actual recommendation?
If you have wordsmithing to the actual recommendation, like you currently see, there are clarifications. They are not substantively changing, they're enhancing. At this point in time, perfectly okay to do the same thing, mark it up in red or in green or whatever the color happens to be that is assigned to you. But red is the easiest in many ways to pick it up. If it is a new recommendation that we have not really talked about, or it's really a substantial change, if you could put that in D, then and highlight that in some fashion, say, hey, this is new or otherwise, just to make sure that we see it, because that requires a little bit more discussion and making sure that we are all in agreement it can move over. The ones that we so far put in column E are ones that have come up a number of times. Sounds like that there is a fair amount of support for it. We might not be exactly in the same spot on how to phrase it best, or that we need to have some nuances in there to make sure that we have, it's not a one-sided perspective and we forgot about another perspective that needs to be brought in as well. So it's not meant to be final, but then it's more of, yes, we are in agreement with the direction that we're heading. We just need to get it cleaned up and properly stated.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Other questions? And as you can see, is that a number of participants have already started.
Hi, Hans. Yeah. Just a quick point of clarification, just so it's not confusing. So we all don't have to be in agreement on everything that's being recommended. Right. If there is a new perspective or something that's a bit different, we can always note dissent, or we can always capture that there are another alternate ways to look at something. So that might be helpful, just because I know there are some issues where the task force is looking at it from a number of different perspectives. So it's really not 100% consensus. It's really just reflecting that this is what the group has brought forward.
Thank you for that clarification, and completely agreed. It can provide those different perspectives. And for both of those, we would then still have to be very clear on what is the intent that then can be considered and weighed by ONC at that point in time. Any other questions? At this point.
Just a comment. We've probably out of all the task force, and Mike and Hans, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we've had just some really good discussion, and the hardest part is going from a discussion to a recommendation, but we need to be thinking about this to complete our tasks for HITECH and for the November 9th meeting with HITECH. We have to have all of our recommendations done before the 1st of November. And that's why we're pushing this really hard. I think we have a really good general idea of what's happening within the pharmacy world, and we will continue to have presenters, but it's really important for the task group members to get these recommendations in for topic one and topic two, which we have completed the discussions on those. And as more discussions come within topic 3 and 4, we might have to go back and tweak a little bit on topic 1 and 2. But this is your time to shine. So, Christian, I think you have a question.
Yeah, thanks, Shelley. I guess I'm still trying to track here too. So in column D, I've got a recommendation there with rationale. It's not directly moved over into final. There are versions of some of those comments, and the final is, can you speak to how column E recommendations relate to, say, my column D, if that's what was intended?
Yes, and what we're trying to do is that there are a couple of recommendations that have the same kind of theme. They are related. So rather than trying to have them as individual recommendations, where possible, we're trying to combine them into one, because it's also going to be a balancing between not getting too lengthy, and if we combine too much, that might get in some areas too lengthy, in some areas not too detailed, because there needs to be flexibility on how to go about implementing, but there are good examples in there. So in that context is that, yes, you will see is that as a first pass that we are trying to combine a number of recommendations together and see whether that works. If there is something that is missing, then we can certainly add an additional recommendation to it, or we get clarification to the existing one to make that fit. So that's why this is not meant to be the final one, but it's just the first pass in trying to collapse some of the things together where they really seem to be on the same theme.
Okay, yeah, and what I was clarifying so I could, what I thought was happening is some of these concepts in D have been already incorporated in E, but we haven't marked in D where we've said we've moved that over here and broadened it or refined it. So is there, as part of our process, as we move stuff to E, can we somehow mark in D that concept was captured in this other phrase over here, so that we're not spinning our wheels trying to figure out how to push stuff back and forth? It may be more of a process of
No, that's a good point, though, and we have not done that yet, but that's a great suggestion. We have done it in prior ones, but didn't have the time yet to mark everything in D that we think has been covered. So that's a good point to clarify. Need to make sure that I can do a good highlighting that's obvious. And then you still might find is that we think we reflected it. In your case, we think we have gotten the essence of the recommendation that you made in the one that we put in column E, highlighted. You still might say is that, you really missed something. That's fair. And look at for those and make sure is that we did not miss something that is critical, or that it still warrants a separate recommendation because we didn't quite catch the intent.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions, comments?
I think Alexis. Anna, you had a question about you weren't able to put recommendations of your use case. Do you need more time to do that, or was that a problem?
Got some not awesome personal news about a family member this week, so I've been a bit distracted and haven't had a chance to get back in and put in recommendations based off of the use cases that I put in on section 2. So it was more of an apology than a question.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No problem. All right. Sorry about that.
We are going to, we went through past ones for topic 1. There still will be cleanups and we'll find things. Next, we're going to do the same kind of thing with topic 2 as well. So hopefully by next week, you'll see a lot of adjustments there as well in column whatever the number is. It might be E as well, not exactly the same numbering. And to clarify, we're only looking at the tabs that have that green bar under them. The ones in red, you can use for historical reference in our discussion, make sure that we didn't miss anything, but that's not where we're going to be looking to make sure that we pick up on draft recommendations. We're only looking at the topic 1 and topic 2 that have a green bar under them.
Yeah, that's the tabs have a green bar. So if you look all the way down, you'll see the green bar.
Okay.
Screen. And so those are the ones that we really want you to focus on. The other tabs that are red are more notes and discussion that led us to the recommendation. And we're on our agenda, Hans, if you could wrap up, but I just want to thank you, Hans, personally, for all the hard work you're doing on consolidating the discussion, Tricia Lee, too, and making sure that we get these recommendations done. So thank you, Hans, for all the hard work you've put into this. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thank you for everybody who started to put in updates and suggestions, because that's what we were looking for, to have that level of interaction to narrow it down to the final recommendation. So really appreciate that.
Okay, I think we can go, Hans, if you're okay, we can go to our next agenda item, which is coming up with recommendation topic three. So can we go back to the agenda?
Or the slides, yeah.
Or the slides, yes. Thank you. Give them a second to pull it up. So number one, and I read it before, but while we're pulling up the slides again, identify standards, needs to support prescribing and management of emerging therapies. So we're at the emerging therapies. Go to the next slide, please. And we have today two presenters who will be focusing on specialty medications. And for those of you who aren't familiar with pharmacy, the specialty pharmacy focuses on high cost drugs that are captured by certain plans or entities from a benefit standpoint. And so I'm excited to hear from Pooja, who is one of our task group members, our task force members. She is the practice lead for pharmacy and PBM services at Point of Care Partners. And we also have Justin Neal, who is also a task force member, who is vice president of patient support and data contract services for Noble Health Services. So thank you both for our presenters, and let's go on to our presentations. Go to the next slide. Pooja, I think you're up first.
All right. Thanks, Shelley. So I know I've got 5 minutes. I'm going to buzz through a bunch of slides. There are quite a few slides in this deck, and it's a lot of them are more informational. So let's go to the next slide. So just quickly, I want to make sure that we are all clear on what we're talking about when we say specialty medication. So I put this slide in just as kind of a definition. So when we talk about specialty medications on the pharmacy side, what we're talking about are medications that in general are defined as high cost, more complex in delivery, handling, administration, and potentially more complex in terms of patient management or restrictions on the medication. Just a quick note for everyone. This chart calls out there's no single list or single definition of a specialty med. All stakeholders kind of define it a little bit differently. But like I said, in general, what we're talking about are the higher cost, higher touch in terms of patient management and special handling of drugs. Let's go to the next slide. The next two slides are just more informational for the task force members. This talks about some general information on factors that may influence whether a medication or product is covered under the pharmacy benefit or the medical benefit. And let's go to the next slide. And this is also just information as well. It's a little bit older data, but the numbers haven't changed a lot. But when you think about just overall prescription volume and prescription spend, about 45% now of the drug spend is under for medications that are covered under the medical benefit. And from a prescription volume standpoint, it's a little bit lower. It's probably about 35-38% of the prescriptions. So let's go to the next slide. So what is the real issue around specialty medications? Well, most of the standards that we've been talking about, whether it's the e-prescribing script standard, EPA, even real-time benefit check, really works for those prescriptions that are covered under the pharmacy benefit. So those, the doctor has a lot of visibility into from prescribing all the way to dispensing. When it falls into, if a prescription or a medication falls into the medical benefit, that's where it falls into a manual process oftentimes. And when you hear about the stat where it takes 2 to 3 weeks for a patient to get on a medication, you know, from a specialty med standpoint, that's really what we're talking about. So let's skip forward 2 slides, and I want to put this in context of a patient scenario. So what I'm going to walk through in the next 3.5 minutes is this patient scenario. So we've got a 37-year-old female patient who's been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. She's recently been having flare-ups and after having it under control for many years, and she goes in to see her doctor. You can see a number of medications that are covered under the pharmacy benefit in blue and those that are covered under the medical benefit in orange. And let's skip ahead to see what happens to this patient. So patient goes into, let's move to the next slide. So patient goes into the doctor for the to talk about this. You know, eligibility checks are run so the doctor knows that the patient is covered under a certain health plan. They know what the pharmacy benefit is. But the difference on the pharmacy benefit side is we have this formulary and benefit information, which is pulled into the EHR. So when the doctor goes to prescribe the medication, he can see what is covered under that patient's pharmacy benefit. He can't necessarily see what is covered under the medical benefit. So on the next step, diagnosis, when he goes to prescribe this med, he will see, for example, that Humira is available under the pharmacy benefit. And there's also information that a PA is required and maybe step therapy is required as well. But provider knows that he's had similar patients who have had success on Remicade, even though you can see that that is covered, for, you know, Remicade's covered under the medical benefit, the doctor doesn't necessarily know that. And that's where it falls into this manual process where the provider kind of has 2 choices, right? They can either prescribe Humira, or knowing that Remicade is a great option, he can go ahead and prescribe that, and that will now kick off this more manual process of getting this patient on this med. Usually what will happen is that prescription will go to a pharmacy, specialty pharmacy starts working that prescription, or it could go to what we call a hub. And you can see the note here, hub services are services where manufacturers can use these vendors to do benefit investigation, all of that. So just know, kind of running out of time here, but know it's a very manual process, which is why it can take 2 to 3 weeks.
We got, Pooja, we got 2 minutes. We got okay. 2 minutes before, so I'm going to give you another minute and a half.
Okay, perfect. So so this is what causes a lot of the kind of pain points, right? And while we're waiting for benefit investigation to happen, while we're waiting for PAs to happen manually, other things, it could be that the patient ends up in the ER, right? Because they are waiting to get on this specialty medication therapy. And so this is oftentimes where we see where the downfall occurs. Unfortunately, you know, if the patient ends up in the ER or something else, they may get on another drug and it feels like the process has to start all over again. So let's flip ahead to the next slide and kind of go through ideal state. So, you know, real value here, the real issue I think we're trying to solve for is it would be great if in the EHR, the doctor is able to see what medication is covered, whether it's under the pharmacy benefit or the medical benefit, right? They can see the restrictions, they can see that they can prescribe, and we will hopefully then gray out that, you know, adverse patient outcome of them ending up in the ER or having a bigger issue because they can't get on the specialty medication. So let's go to the next slide because I do want to quickly touch on standards. So this is also for reference for the task force members. You know, there are standards in place that could be solving for this. The one call out I'll make is a lot of what's in red is HL7 fire IGs that are focused on prior authorization, things that we're already doing on, you know, on the NCPDP side for the pharmacy benefit. So you see price cost transparency, you see prior auth support, all of that. But the one caveat here is CMS, which I know is not under ONC's purview, but when it came to the CMS proposed rule for prior authorization and using some of these new standards, specialty medications, unfortunately, were not called out specifically. So not something that we can't overcome, but just wanted to make that note. So really, from a pain point standpoint, just in summary, we know there's things that can solve this. I think there are some opportunities for ONC, and thank you for the time.
Thank you, Pooja. Can you wait until we go through the next presentation, or do you want to address it now?
It's directly related to the presentation at hand.
What do you think, Hans? Do you want to let's go ahead. We'll just give Justin a little bit more time.
I think another point that needs to be included here is patient access to pricing information comes into play very much as well, especially as we're seeing more medications at substantially higher costs. As to how does that factor in to decision making as well? Maybe one thing if you're looking at a $20 copay, quite another thing if you're looking at a 20% of a $10,000 or $30,000 or $100,000 medication at a $4,000 out-of-pocket expense. So that's another element that needs to get factored in somewhere.
Thanks.
Go ahead, Pooja. Did you want to respond?
Yeah, Ike, that's a great point. And I know we did create an implementation guide under the Karen Alliance for a consumer-facing real-time benefit check. I did not actually just realize I didn't add that in here, but that is something that I think could be a great opportunity as well. So that's it.
Thank you, Pooja. Let's go on to the next slide. And I assume, Justin, you're up.
All right. Thank you so much, Shelley. I want to go ahead and go to the next slide. Awesome job by Pooja. Really going to kind of give an overview of some of the pharmacy impact and items that they really need as part of the data that sometimes gets, it's a little bit less direct prescriber patient facing, but still really important as part of the continuum that happens in specialty pharmacy. So from a high level, you're getting the prescription in, and Noble Health Services, where I work, is what's probably considered more of a mid-range regional specialty. So licensed and have patients in all 50 states, but not one of these large vertically integrated specialty pharmacies that you might have attached to a PBM. So when the prescription comes in, as Pooja said, there's a lot of prior authorization and benefits investigation that's going on to get that patient set up and approved, kind of a lot of coordination with the provider. From there, once all that really hard work and information that Pooja really kind of talked through is done, that's when you're getting the bread and butter of what specialty has. And that's when you're getting a lot of the clinical support, where you have a team of clinical pharmacists that are following this patient and collecting a lot of information that we're required to for a number of reasons that we'll talk about in another slide here. But also making sure that patient really stays on therapy. And that's really the goal with a lot of why these barriers exist, which that's essentially what specialty is a lot of barriers from a lot of different stakeholders. And the one that matters the most really up front and kind of the last piece before it's off to the patient is that copay assistance and that making sure the patient can afford it both short-term and long-term, because that's really a hot topic right now in the specialty space. If we want to flip over to the next slide, talking about barriers, essentially that's what specialty revolves around, is getting the patient on therapy. These are exceedingly high caustic medications, could be $5,000, could be $30,000 a month. Some of them could be upwards of $90,000 a month. And that's why the payers in a lot of cases are setting these barriers, and the pharmacy is helping to get through those, to get that patient covered for the product that the provider needs. But at the same time, trying to make sure that they're maximizing the value of that. Flipping over to the next slide. Looking at some of the technology and data points that we've really been talking through for the last couple months that the pharmacy needs, it really depends on the stakeholder that we're looking at. So from good pharmaceutical care, that demographic information like patient weight, patient height, stuff like that, to really figure out the appropriate dose is something that is needed every day with a lot of medications, and to really get that full med list and make sure that it's an appropriate therapy and support that PA. From there, it kind of goes into the payer barriers that exist, that they're collecting some information, both making sure that utilization is maximized, patients are staying compliant and getting reporting, because they don't let everyone fill these prescriptions. And they want to make sure that they're getting the information to make sure that the patient is getting the most of this really expensive therapy. From that, the part that I think a lot of folks might not be aware of is the accreditation barriers, that Lots of organizations, in order to fill these, have to have external accreditations that also have additional information and requirements that require them to collect a lot of information that's from this patient's medical record, including tracking outcomes, and then really being measured on turnaround time to make sure how quickly they're getting patients on the therapy. And that's similar to what the manufacturers are looking at as well, to make sure that that patient is really getting on therapy as quickly as possible. Flipping over to the next slide. And this is the part where I think when we're talking a lot about what we're looking at, that when you have local solutions for information, when you're really dealing with a patient population that's not in your backyard, this is a really important part of having standardization that really transcends and goes into the pharmacy workflow across the country, at least from my perspective, that it's really easy when you have patients in your backyard, but it's very difficult when you have patients that are across the country and trying to work through some of those challenges. Flipping over the next slide, and I know I'm coming up on time here. Just a high level real quick.
I'm going to give you another minute, to be fair. Okay.
Sorry, I know I can talk fast. So,
yeah.
So
2 minutes for you.
Awesome. All right. So looking at a couple patient examples and just high level what stuff might be required. So getting a patient that, for instance, is a Hep C patient, to fill this and get this out the door between the payer and the accreditation requirements, the pharmacy actually has to have all this information we've been talking about as good pharmaceutical care. And we're measured on it by external auditors coming in and making sure that we did. So that includes the genotype of the therapy, the viral load, the cirrhosis status, any prior treatment that they had. After they complete the therapy, the pharmacy is no longer seeing that patient. We have to get SVR12s to prove that they actually achieved a cure. I'll skip that invoice piece. Crohn's patient, we might need a TB test to actually justify the fact that they're going on a TNF inhibitor, and they need to confirm that it doesn't have TB and has to be confirmed annually. That is a patient with Crohn's, kind of following up on things like flare-ups, counseling on steroid use, having this information that a lot of times the specialty pharmacy is very manually gathering this information from the patient, but by having that integration directly with the EHR, having integration with the health systems, it goes a long, long way to making sure that we can capture this information. And then flipping over to the last slide, also making sure that as we capture information, regardless of quality of life, cure status, bill histories, compliance, and other drug-related problems that the pharmacy finds, making sure that we're sharing that back to the healthcare continuum to help improve the care across the board. So I know it's really quick, but thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, both Pooja and Justin. We appreciate you, your input into this. I'm going to take the first question for myself. So both Pooja and Justin, we know, we've heard, at least I have heard, in relationship during transitions of care, that some of the specialty pharmacies, as the patient goes into the hospital or into a skilled nursing facility where you have different medication dispensing aspects. Have you looked at those issues, or is it still a very manual process once those medications get to the where the patient is in the hospital or a skilled nursing facility?
Justin, I don't know if you want to take that. I have not dug into that piece of it, Shelley, as much. Or been on the ambulatory side for the work that I've done.
Haven't dug in as much, but what I'll say, Shelley, is whenever you're having that patient transitioning between different care modalities, it gets inherently more complicated. And it's a little bit easier when you have therapies that maybe have more of a nursing component to it, because there's already a better communication along those lines. But if it's more of a self-administered therapy, it leads to a lot more phone calls and manual intervention to understand what's going on with that patient.
So what I'm hearing is it's a barrier in some, most situations, but what you're saying is, what I'd like to hear from is on the patient advocacy side, if you've run into these problems after summer. We'll let you go next.
From a patient side, it really varies. And at the end of the day, trying to get stuff to the patient, the more they're ending up in different modalities, it definitely can complicate the situation, I guess, is the way that I'd summarize it as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Justin. Summer?
Yeah, thanks, Shelley. I guess I want to go back a little bit to Pooja's presentation and tie it into this presentation as well. I guess I'm struggling a little bit to understand the problem to be solved here with standards, because all the standards required to do this exist. So I'd like to understand a little better where the barriers are, because I know, for example, with the hepatitis C example, health system pharmacists, that are operating on integrated EMR platforms and have direct HL7 connections with their providers, they're getting most, if not all, of this information, and they're kind of operating, I think, in an ideal state that was sort of projected earlier in this slide deck. So it seems like a little bit of what we're solving for is the specialty pharmacies that maybe are not part of a health system or directly engaged with some sort of provider network. But again, the standards seem to exist. So I want to make sure, it's clear what the problem is to be solved here from the standard perspective.
Yeah, I can address that. So yes, I mean, obviously, if you're in a health system, I think you've got a lot more access to information. I see there's been, kind of a lot of chat happening around this. I think the bigger thing is, yes, the standards exist. The question is the information, first of all, being shared, right? And then also, we've talked about this on several calls, right? The education piece of it. There should be access to all this information that is not necessarily, happening today. So I think it ties into some of our prior recommendations of, do we need to educate? Do we need to do more of that, about information blocking, about EHI, about what needs to be shared, all of those things that we've been talking about. And so real quickly, I had my hand up, Shelley, just to address also your question. I was thinking about as you were talking about, if a patient moves to a SNF or another setting, the one thing just totally a project that we're working on more on the post-acute care side as point of care partners, I did hear, which shocked me. And again, I would love to hear from some of the patient advocates on the phone, but we heard that as a patient is getting transitioned from the hospital to a long-term post-acute care setting, oftentimes the medication list or the medication prescriptions are being handed to the drivers that are driving the patients to these facilities, as opposed to being sent electronically. And to me, I think I was a little bit in shock to hear that. And I'm sure that's happening all over the place. So I think that is one thing that, to Summer's point too, if standards are in place, if we have this ability, right, how do we then make sure that is being utilized and being sent electronically versus handing papers to drivers who probably don't even, don't always necessarily hand them off. So just another, data point there.
Great. Thank you, Pooja. Afton?
Yeah, thanks for the great presentations, both. I was thinking about specialty medications, and Pooja, I know you mentioned a lot of them are in the medical space and billed through Medicare Part B. Some of them are now in Part D, especially with biosimilars. And the one thing I was thinking about is a lot of times these medications are processed not in the community pharmacy, but they're at a separate specialty pharmacy. And then a lot of times they're mailed to the patient. And so I don't know if I have any recommendations, but should we think about making recommendations to make the communication process easier from the patient getting the medication at their house versus coming into the pharmacy and answer questions? Is there anything we need to think about there that could make it easier for the patient from an access or just questions and data exchange perspective?
I'm curious what Anna's reaction is to that based on her, from a patient perspective in particular, but generally, Afton, I'm curious, what would you be particularly thinking about that there might be some gaps that we would have to fill in that space from a pharmacist patient communication perspective? What jumps out to you that that we could advance better further with ONC's help?
Yeah, and that's the million-dollar question, Hans. It just came to my mind right now, and let me put some thought to that. It would be great to hear from Anna. I see that she has her hand raised as well, so that would be fantastic. But I'm just, even something from, I know we need signatures. It's a requirement that we get a signature every time we send something out. I don't know if that process could be streamed down a little more. Just being able to, not having the patient at the counter, there may be quite, I don't know. Let me think about it, but let's hear from Anna because I think she might have some good feedback on that.
Anna, go ahead.
Well, I have lots of thoughts and feedback. I'll try to channel them towards something that's specifically relevant to this. I mean, as somebody who takes four, sometimes five specialty medications, this whole process is so remarkably dysfunctional that it's difficult for me to imagine that it's anything but designed to be dysfunctional so that people don't finish the process and therefore the health plan doesn't have to pay for the medication. A lot of this stuff is data that exists somewhere, but the process of coordination between the lab, the physician, the pharmacy or specialty pharmacy is remarkably difficult and manual, and all of that has to be mediated by the patient or somebody on behalf of the patient. So, for instance, I take a, if I can get it, an erythropoietin for my chronic kidney disease from diabetes, and it leads to anemia. And because of FDA's really crappy guidance, it makes the healthcare plans have the ability to limit or have chosen to limit access to it for people who have hemoglobin above 10, which is absurd, but we'll put that aside for now. When you get, so you have to get lab values. The health plan requires you to get lab values. The lab values, that whole process, you know, you have to go into a lab, et cetera. That's a very, you know, demanding part of it. The data then has to be received from the lab to the physician, which is weirdly taking longer than it should. It's gotten better over time. And then the physician has to send the lab values from my hemoglobin to the specialty pharmacy. Now, the specialty pharmacy for the insurance plan only wants one discrete value from that lab test. So for instance, with hemoglobin, you can be dehydrated and that impacts your level. If the pharmacy actually would receive more data from that CBC, then they might be able to say, hey, this person's serum creatinine is a little elevated. Maybe they actually have a lower hemoglobin, but it's artificially inflated. And therefore, it would be possible for them to make a slightly more nuanced decision about whether or not this patient should have access to the therapy. Whether or not they choose to do that would be different. But right now, they say that that's not possible because they don't have the data, because the data isn't a prescribed fields or structured fields, et cetera. So like that's one medication that just I take, but it's an example of the kinds of things. My mother is not well, and the number of things that she has to go through to get access to her specialty medication, somebody who is really suffering and a lot of pain and is having a really hard time like managing all of this, it's just absurd. And like, you know, all of this stuff, all of this data exists in certain places. And anyway, there's so, every case is different. Every patient's capability is different. And every medication and the requirements by the pharmacy or by the, you know, the pharmacy plan or the health plan is different. So, but the crux of it is a lot of this data exists. It just, none of it flows from one place to the other. As a result, it both requires the patient to be the person that manages this entire process on behalf of their provider, on behalf of specialty pharmacy, and make sure that all of this stuff happens. And in addition, because of the way it works, like there's no possibility that these specialty pharmacies could make a more nuanced decision about what is and is not appropriate for this individual patient. And whether or not they intentionally choose to not look at other data fields, like the case that I gave you with hemoglobin and erythropoietins, versus whether or not having, you know, if we could get them more ready access to additional information that would enable more nuanced decision-making for individuals, then that at least would be one fewer thing that they could claim was the barrier to access. I don't know. I could go on. I won't. But there's a lot of data dysfunction. All of that has to be mediated by the patient.
Yeah. Anna, this is Shelley. Just a follow-up question to you, and you don't have to answer it if it's too much personal health information, but have you ever been admitted to the hospital and had trouble getting your specialty medications?
Or have you heard the specialty medications that I take at home?
Yes.
I usually just take them with me.
Okay, so your solution from a patient side is to take those during transitions of care with you, not necessarily having them managed by either the hospital, long-term care, or another location that you might have to be admitted to.
If that just sounds like torture to me, frankly. I mean, fortunately, I've been in a position. There's only been once that I was admitted. Well, it's twice that I've been admitted from the ER into the actual, into an inpatient scenario. And I had in both cases had friends come to my apartment, just grab all my meds and bring them.
Interesting. Ike.
Yeah, to back that up, I would not dream of relying on a hospital to replace a specialty drug. And thinking about the reapprovals on that for a medicine, it could be, literally $1 million a year on authorization. That would just be a nightmare. I do think it's important that we think about it from a patient-centered perspective as we look at duplicative questions and how do we keep the patient at the center of these exchanges so the patient is not overburdened with information or overburdened with requests for duplicative information. Another place that seems to be a gap, and I went through this actually myself in the last few days, is looking at patient information about medications. In terms of looking at the medication list that's available electronically from my pharmacy does not include educational links regarding any of the medicines. It would not be that difficult to have a link for each medicine back to the pharmaceutical manufacturer of that medication, or even a link back to the pharmacy to say, hey, if I've got a question about this drug, who do I contact?
Justin or Pooja, you want to comment on that, what Ike is talking about?
Justin here. So I was just going to say that technology absolutely does exist today. I'd say that kind of depends on some of the platforms to be able to communicate that as part of the initial counseling with the pharmacist, that additional resources from the manufacturer to really aid in that process, especially if you're talking something where it's a self-administered medication and it's an injection technique. And then also making the patient aware, to your point, like what type of question goes to who? What should be a call to the manufacturer versus a call to the pharmacy versus a call to the doctor?
Right. And that may be an opportunity here as we're looking at recommendations for standards or inclusion. The technology exists in practice, but does there need to be a push to incorporate that as kind of potentially a certification criterion that says, hey, you as a pharmacist using a certified technology, for the certification perspective, it needs to include this kind of functionality. So ability to get patient education material, ability to connect the patient to the pharmacist on call or on duty if there are questions, et cetera, et cetera. And that is certainly within our wheelhouse as a task force.
Thank you, Ike. Alexis?
Yeah, and as I sit and listen, I'm like tacking on more comments, so I try to be brief. I guess I want to go back first to your question, Shelley, about specialty medications during admission at the hospital. And so I've had that experience with my daughter inpatient on several occasions with specialty medication that's not available readily, and running into obstacles with being allowed to bring it in from the outside. So that's a real obstacle that patients and caregivers face on a regular basis. And then most of the time when the hospital realizes that you're going to have to bring it in yourself for timely care, you know, you can't self-administer it or have a caregiver administer it or keep it in your room. It needs to be under lock and key at a nurse's station within the floor that you're on. And that's also really difficult for specialty medications with shortages and having comfort in handing over something and making sure that you get that back or it doesn't get misplaced, et cetera. So just wanted to weigh in on that question. I also wanted to weigh in on your question about mail order and some other obstacles on use cases regarding that. So there are health plans that require that you only use mail order for certain specialty medications or medications in general as well. And even those that have an opt-out component to that, that opt-out period takes time and is also sometimes not recorded correctly on the health plan side and runs into problems for weeks and weeks and weeks having access to getting medication because you can't get around the mail order only pharmacy. And getting it more timely and opting out. And then the other point I wanted to make with that too is that mail order, when it's dictated, you can only use it, also becomes an obstacle for the patient and caregiver, whereas you may have secondary insurance and your secondary insurance is not accepted at that mail order pharmacy because that's really your health plan is the one supplying the medication for mail order. And so that creates a large burden for patients to either pay out of pocket and then get reimbursed by their secondary provider, which many people cannot do. Most people cannot do with some of these specialty medications. And so that's just another issue with mail order to be sorted out. But the last comment I just want to make goes back to some of the flow chart from Pooja's presentation. And I'd put this in the comments, so I'll just briefly, you know, rehash what I had said in the comment, that a lot of the obstacles for patients start with that step two, where the decision-making process by the provider for what to prescribe, hopefully that's a shared decision with the patient. But once a determination has been made what they're going to prescribe, majority of the time, the provider just sends that off electronically or hands somebody a written prescription, and then that's it. They're not going into the system that is available in real time to see what the coverage is and see where the obstacles are and see if there's a step plan that has to be gone through first, or there has to be a generic instead or a different drug tried first or a PA process, what have you. So it just goes back to the obstacles that, you know, we have been talking about from the beginning of this task force, that it just stops right there. You know, the pharmacy then gets it and it goes right back to the patient and caregiver to sort out all the obstacles and make the phone calls to the health plan, to the provider, to the pharmacy, sometimes multiple pharmacies. Something needs to be done to move that forward. So if this information is available to providers from the beginning, and while the patient is sitting there in their office and they can go through it together and figure it out, then great. But that's not happening in the real world.
Thank you. Pooja.
Yeah, I just want to make sure, and I think, you know, one thing, the reason I wanted to start with that slide that said, I don't think we're ever going to land on a definition of specialty, right? Everyone's going to cover differently. Everyone's going to do all that. So I appreciate all of the discussion around that. But I think, you know, I want to kind of refocus our, discussion on, you know, what can we actually do about this? And I see there's just a lot of kind of chat on in the discussion on, you know, EHI, right? And I feel like, is there an exercise for us or recommendations that we can be making? And I guess technically specialty pharmacies, everyone is covered, right, under the information blocking. So kind of looking at what is available today as that as part of that EHI data set, and what should we be able to share back and forth. So just wanted to make sure that we're kind of focused on what ONC can actually focus on.
Thank you, Pooja. Hans?
Thank you. And I really enjoyed the discussion here as it both spoken and by chat. It emphasizes a number of themes that we have started to see that specialty medications are contributing to as extra arguments why this is important, the sharing of EHI, the education, other components that I think we can bolster those suggestions to say it's across the board, and highlight in specialty medication a variety of the examples that even further have that need. At the same point in time, there are two parts that I want to bring up. One is related to one of the discussions around privacy and consent that's popping up in the chat and for consideration. And the other one is that I'm trying to find out, as we have talked a lot about EHI, and that's then more a question, find out what other particular interactions, and we got a couple of those, that are specific to specialty medication that make it particularly complex that we might not have touched upon yet. I think privacy and consent is somewhat in that in-between part that we have talked about it a little bit, but I think today that becomes more clear is that having a better opportunity and ability to have computable consent mechanisms, that certain data can be shared, cannot be shared, that there are certain steps that you can take, cannot take in the context of specialty medication. I think that really highlights that continues to be a big topic that towards ONC we need to highlight that needs to be tackled. And there are different perspectives from prior high-tech discussions on this, in the interoperability standards work group feedback to HCI 1, et cetera, that there is the standards part and tagging, which can get you so far, but at some point in time, there needs to be a real infrastructure in place, because just tagging the data and letting it flow through the system to all the parts is not necessarily going to be able to ensure that the data is properly recognized and always most current rules are being used. So as we make those suggestions, I would strongly recommend that we include not just the looking at standards and adoption generally, but very specifically as well, the infrastructure that would enable us to do that and do that real time, so that we don't need to chase down flags that may need to be changed across many different providers. So it's a big topic, and that I would suggest to include in our recommendations. The other part is just back to specialty medication specifically. What other areas are there that you see that are not a more of what we have discussed, and that these are good examples there, but we have not covered it yet? Are there any particular interactions that we just haven't covered yet? And Pooja, you had on one of the slides quite a variety of price transparency, prior authorization, otherwise. Is there anything that jumps out in that space that is under focus that we need more focus on to advance that for specialty medications?
Yeah, I do think, and thanks for calling that out, I do think both of those topics are important, but I think it was Ike that commented it, right, that we do have the standards in place for those. I think the question becomes adoption of those, and then also the patient aspect. I think, when I think about is that what's the opportunity here and what are we really missing? I mean, it really is the data flowing back and forth, right, the visibility, and I think it's bringing into not only the visibility, but really the consumer side, right? I mean, we do have an implementation guide that could be picked up that patient, facing apps could, allow patients to check. We know doctors are busy, right? They're not going to necessarily have the time to check on pricing, things like that. So what is that opportunity for the consumer? And we clearly have very, folks on this call too that are very invested in their care. And I think having that visibility into where their drug is in the process in terms of a prior authorization, where it is in the benefit investigation side, how much it's going to cost them out of pocket, I think is a huge piece that is missing today. Because if pharmacists don't have time, if providers don't have time, let the patient get more involved, because these patients, are clearly have the ability to do this. They want to do it. It's just a matter of getting the information. So I would say if I had a wish list, I would say that's kind of the number one that I think that we need to focus on.
Thank you, Pooja and Hans. Summer?
Thanks, Shelley. So actually kind of building on what Hans and Pooja were just mentioning, you know, a lot of our discussion after Pooja's presentation really focused more on the clinical side of things. But I want to go back because there was a large chunk of her presentation that related more to the administrative transactions, the claims and claims related transactions. And it feels like one of the fundamental problems there is just we have two parallel standards for medical claims and pharmacy claims. I know there are commercial services that exist that kind of, you know, map between the two different types of claims and the appropriate clearinghouses. And I think they're done in a more proprietary way, but they kind of map those transactions between networks and allow for that flow as an intermediary. I know at one point NCPDP was looking at this issue and trying to figure out how to harmonize a little better with the WEDI standards. But, you know, I don't know where that landed, but it feels like that's, you know, if there is a standards problem here, that may be one of the key issues is to understand that sort of harmonization between the WEDI standard on the medical benefit and the NCPDP standard, not only for specialty medications, but also for vaccines, which are also often covered under a medical benefit. So I'd like to spend a little bit of time there, and I have to admit I'm not sure exactly where NCPDP stands today on kind of harmonizing that standard. So I'd love to hear from someone who's more in the know there. But it feels like that might be a role for ONC as well, as to kind of help facilitate that mapping of the two standards so that data can flow between what are today kind of two distinct transaction-based clearinghouse networks.
Pooja, did you want to
Yeah, I just put this in the chat. So thanks for that. I do know, so NCPDP, a couple of years ago, one of the specialty task forces put out a white paper that really highlighted this issue, right, of saying, you know, there's all these separate, disparate systems. It doesn't all tie together. So I know that task group, and I know Margaret Weicker and others at NCPDP did reach out to several organizations and CAQH. And I think Margaret's on the line. She could probably comment a little bit more on the actual work. But I do know that NCPDP is now working with CAQH on this topic and doing potential operating rules around this. So I know they are just getting started. I did meet with CAQH couple weeks ago just to do a deeper dive, but that is something that is now being looked at, you know, across kind of organizations, and hoping Margaret can just add into the chat a little bit more on the actual operating rules. So.
Thank you, Pooja. Yep. Anna?
I just wanted to, and Pooja her earlier comment did pretty much echoed exactly what I was going to say. I mean, just trying to think about all of the different points, many, many myriad points of frustration throughout all of these processes, the amount of time that I spend on it. One of the key points of frustration is that all of this information exists in one form or another, but much of process information and status information is not visible to the patient. And it's as if we pretend that providers actually have time to do this stuff, and they don't. Even when they are awesome providers with great staffs, they just don't have time to do it. And even if they really have a committed sense of urgency to serve their patients, it's not nearly as urgent as mine or that of, you know, mine from my mother's. So all of this information, data elements about the status and the ability to proactively move data or like ping the specialty pharmacy that the lab data had arrived into the doctor's EHR portal, or be able to actively like send and ping them and say it's there, that should be given to the patient, both in terms of data about what is the data that's being considered, what's the status of whether or not it's been considered or opened, or viewed by somebody there, the ability to ping somebody through an informatics system, you know, a portal, whatever, to say, hey, it's sitting in your, you know, inbox. You need to take a look at this, process it. All of that power should be given to the patient rather than pretending, as we like to do, that physicians are the only ones who can handle that process and that they have actually the time to do it. I mean, preferably, patient would not need to be involved, but that's the reality that we live in. So let's stop making the process more difficult by pretending things are what they're not.
Ike, thank you. Thank you, Anna.
Yeah, just as a counter to that, I'm not sure we need to put more burden on the patient to do an administrative task regarding, hey, pushing data back and forth. That's why we've spent an awful lot of resources developing technology to make data more accessible. Providers have concerns about creating administrative burdens. So do patients. I spend a lot of time just dealing with my pain. I don't need an extra burden of chasing down to see if a lab value came back from a laboratory to forward it on to a specialty pharmacy. That's creating.
I'm not saying you need that. None of us need that. I would prefer to do the things that I used to do before I do all this stuff. But the reality is that's what I spend a lot of time doing, whether it's for my care or for like my mother's care. That's where it stands. And instead, I mean, nothing about this is ideal, but it would be great if I didn't have to wait on hold to reach the doctor or to reach the pharmacy to see who has opened what, only to find out that they hadn't. I mean, at least that would save hours of hold time for a minute.
I agree with you there. To kind of help mitigate that, something I put in the chat a few minutes ago was potentially what we need is a common workflow tool that's visible to all to understand where a particular medication is in the workflow from a physician recommending or issuing a script to it until the drug actually ends up in the patient's hands for consumption, so that there's a clear understanding visible to all about what the process is, what's the workflow for that particular medication, where does it stand in the workflow, and who's responsible for taking the next action.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. But I think what we really need to realize in terms of what you're talking about is a separate process for high cost drugs, high risk patients. But is that really what we should be doing? Shouldn't we be looking at the exchange of all medications, access to medications?
I would suggest that the same base process relates to drug regardless of cost, whether it's, you know, out of stock. You know, it doesn't matter if the drug's $100,000 a dose or 20 cents a dose. Again, tracking that through is a simple tool for everybody to understand, okay, physician or clinician ordered a drug. Okay. Has it been sent to the pharmacy? Yes. Is it in stock at the pharmacy? Yes. No. Those kinds of questions are consistent throughout. For especially more expensive drugs, there may be some additional steps, but I honestly don't think it's a different process. There may be, again, some additional details or additional components, but I think the core workflow or the core steps or the core communication is really the same regardless of what the medication is.
Yeah, and I've had to do with generic medications that have been on the market forever. Same process. I don't know why, but that's where we are.
Thank you. We have 2 minutes left, probably less than 2 minutes left. Alexis, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to reiterate too much of what's just gone back and forth, but I was just waiting to weigh in, and I put a lot of the comments already in the chat too. But, you know, for one, patients, you know, who are already stuck in the middle, even when transparency is better, and if transparency gets more improved in the future, they're still always stuck in the middle because there's only so much the patient or the caregiver can actually push forward or do rather than make a bunch of, you know, beyond making a bunch of phone calls to everybody involved and getting different answers from the pharmacy, from the provider's office, from the insurer, et cetera, and literally just passing information back and forth and no one pushing it through. So just, you know, again, to Ike's point about being stuck in the middle and placing more burden, that's never the solution. And on top of all of it, I've mentioned this in past meetings, so I'll just say it again. There are patients and caregivers who are not able or capable to do these things. There are people that don't speak English. There are people that don't know what the channels are. There are people that don't know who to contact. And there are people that are very, very, very sick who literally physically cannot do it. So to say that we should place the burden back on patients to help push the process along goes way back and, you know, to before even having any of these processes available. So patients do play a part, but they're not the be all and end all, and they're not in a position to be the be all and end all. They can't move it forward. That is just not a solution.
Thank you, Alexis. Pooja, can we wait until after public comment?
Sure. Yep.
Okay, Mike, go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Shelley. We're going to open up our meeting for verbal public comment. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So I see Margaret Weicker has her hand raised. So Margaret, please go ahead. You have 3 minutes. And you're still on mute.
Thanks. I'm Margaret Weicker, the Vice President of Standards Development at NCPDP. In August of 2018, NCPDP formed the Work Group 45 Benefit Coverage Identification Task Group to address issues related to the identification of benefit coverage, specifically the challenges in determining if a specialty medication is covered under the medical or pharmacy benefit. The desired outcome of benefit identification is to provide a comprehensive benefit coverage overview electronically at the time the medication is selected and to improve a patient's ability to begin therapy without delay. The process should be easily accessible without multiple manual steps or duplication of efforts by providers, specialty pharmacies, and hubs. The task group published a white paper which addresses those challenges and potential electronic solutions that can be leveraged in the prescribing and dispensing processes. The task group also conducted a survey to identify which techniques are most commonly used today to determine benefit coverage. A key finding of the survey is the X12-270-271 transactions could be more effective in communicating medical benefit coverage for drugs if additional granularity was included in the transactions, which is supported by the existing format. As the recognized operating rule authoring entity, NCPDP contacted CAQH Corps to discuss collaboration opportunities that would support the exchange of more granular eligibility information related to the medical benefit on the request and response between prescribers and payers. After Leanne Stimber, President and CEO of NCPDP, presented the opportunity to the CAQH Corps board, approval of the project was given, and NCPDP and CAQH Corps began their work. NCPDP and Corps would be happy to share more with the task force about this work effort and encourage all those interested to reach out to participate. I'll put the information in the chat on how to join an NCPDP task group, as well as a link to our specialty pharmacy resource guide. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Great. Thank you, Margaret. Next up is Aaron Weber. You have 3 minutes.
Good morning, all. This is Erin Weber, Vice President of the Committee on Operating Rules for Information Exchange, or CORE, at CAQH. For those who might not be familiar with CORE, we are a collaboration of more than 100 industry stakeholders who lead the development of consensus-based business rules or operating rules that build on standards to improve interoperability and drive automation. CORE is designated by the Secretary of HHS as the National Operating Rule Authoring entity under HIPAA. So I just want to build on some of Margaret's comments. We are excited to update the task force on the joint work CORE is currently conducting with NCPDP to address this eligibility gap in the specialty pharmacy space. As Margaret mentioned, in a recent white paper, NCPDP identified challenges experienced by stakeholders in being able to timely and accurately identify the appropriate benefit coverage, whether medical or pharmacy benefit, for specific medications being prescribed and potential out-of-pocket costs to the patient at the time of care. So NCPDP and CORE are collaborating to support the exchange of more granular information related to the medical benefit in the 270-271 eligibility request and response between providers and payers including coverage and patient financial responsibility like copays, deductibles, and coinsurance, which can be supported by the current version of the X12 standard, but is not required. So our organizations are right now conducting a joint environmental scan to better understand the current industry approaches to address this challenge. And we plan to launch a joint NCPDP and CORE eligibility and benefits task group in October to develop operating rule requirements for the X12 270, 271 to support the exchange of this coverage and benefit information for medications covered under the medical benefit, which could also include gene therapy. Ultimately, our goal would be to bring these rules to NCVHS, the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics, for consideration for federal mandate under HIPAA sometime next year, as currently plans are not required to include this information in their eligibility response. Although health plans have not yet built out the systems and applications that can support code-level inquiry using existing and widely adopted standards like the 270-271, and building on a transaction that's already highly automated will make it more efficient, less costly, and faster to implement in the market, perhaps than using a new standard or one-off process that would need to be developed from scratch. NCPDP and CORE are happy to share more with the task force about this work effort and encourage all those interested to reach out to participate. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Erin. And next up, we have Mary Andralis. You have 3 minutes.
Hi there, everybody. I want.
I think we lost Mary.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes. Go ahead. Yeah. Okay. You're next.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. I wanted to just first thank you all for your work, because I see this as a group of highly motivated and, you know, very skilled pharmacy and specialty industry kind of experts. So I really appreciate everyone's insights and expertise. I actually have more of a comment than a question than a comment, which is that when I looked at the charge that is given to this task force by ONC, the focus is really on public health and kind of identifying what those standards and data needs are. And so I was curious to know, you know, as we think about public health, I know the other listed short-term goal is related to public health emergency use cases. But then it goes on into the long-term kind of vision, thinking about public health surveillance and reporting and public health interventions. And I really wanted to kind of, in my opinion, I think kind of encourage us to think about that so that we don't get stuck on some of the issues related to just the standards and the data needs, but also the use cases, so that we can eventually get to the public health divisions and groups and CDC and beyond, and the state and local agencies, to demonstrate to them how this data would be useful and helpful to them, because I think there's work that needs to be done there. So I know it doesn't technically fit within this idea of standards and data needs, but from where I sit, there's a need to even just inform and educate the public health world, which is currently kind of undergoing a modernization. And, you know, there's a lot of action there in trying to kind of modernize the entire public health data system. So this is a great time for pharmacy to be there at the table. And so I don't know if we just kind of append the short term, you know, anyway, I just wanted to kind of bring that long term vision up and elevate that, because I think it's so important and so timely in what we're seeing right now with all of the action in the HIEs and the public health space as well. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Mary. And Hans and Shelley, I'm not seeing any other hands raised. So I'll turn it back to you to close us out.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, everyone. And Pooja, sorry about that. I hope you could put it in the chat what your question was. But thank you, everyone, for getting us going on our first topic three challenge for us. Remember to put your recommendations in. And Hans, any last questions?
Not particularly question. Well, yeah, general question is that as we go through our notes on topic three, we have the tab for topic three. So please put them in there. It's particularly focusing on standards gaps. If there are some examples from specialty medication, of which we had a number, that really bolster the recommendations in topic one or two, don't hesitate to add them there. to really further underscore the importance of that recommendation across the board and specialty medication in particular. So that will then figure out the balance between the two. So looking forward to lots of red markup and additional recommendations over the next couple of days.
Just a last, we are not meeting next week. I know we're at the top of the hour. I also will not be available on September 13th. So Hans will be doing this with the help of ONC, which he's very capable of doing. And so thank you, everyone. Have a safe Labor Day holiday and wishing well to our colleagues in Florida. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.